Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Video Nasty Project. And if you're just joining us, you're probably asking yourself, what the hell is a video nasty? Well, here, let me bring you up to speed a little bit, shall we? Back in the early 80s, about 82 to about 84, the moral guardians of the UK, they were freaking out over the rise of horror movies and the subculture just bubbling underneath the surface. So you had folks like Mary Whitehouse and Margaret Thatcher and the Daily Mail and the Daily Mirror and the Director of Public Prosecutions. They were freaking out and assembled a list of 72 movies that were deemed obscene by UK court law. And that doesn't necessarily mean that it is pornography, although there was some fucking in there. But movies that were so violent, so disgusting that they would undercut the moral fabric of the country, or so they feared. And so the DPP took the movie and divided them into two piles. You had the first half of the list where movies that they thought they could land a conviction. And then you had the set of movies that they didn't think were strong enough to get a conviction for, that they couldn't get a jury to say, yes, this is obscene. So movies like The Evil Dead, The Beyond, that wound up getting away scot-free. But then there was a third list. While this political kerfluffle was going on, the DPP was also assembling a list of movies that wouldn't be heard at the higher court. They would be heard at the lower magistrate court. Now, as I understand it, a magistrate court is kind of similar to, in America, a circuit judge, where it was regional. You had to get over here and over here and over here and over here. And so what a policeman would do is he would go into a shop with his warrant and say, I've got a warrant for X amount of movies. And he would present it to the shop owner, and he would get Texas Chainsaw and Martin and Night of the Living Dead and Foxy Brown and a whole bunch of other crazy shit off the shelf and present the shop owner with a summons saying, okay, turn up on this court date and you can argue your case and maybe get your stuff back. Often the shop owner would just cut bait and said, all right, it's a fair cop, I'm done, and walk away. So what the police would do was they would take these pile of evidence and they would simply just destroy it, throw it into incinerator, it's done. So no court time, no jail time, no fines. You would just have your materials seized and destroyed, which sucks, but it's better than spending 6 months in jail for renting, you know, evil speak. So that's what we're focusing on here. We are taking a look at these list of movies off the Section 3 list that weren't strong enough or obscene enough to get convicted at the higher court level, but could get you in trouble at a circuit court judge level. That's what we're taking a look at for the next 80 or so movies. But before we get to those 80 movies, what I'm going to do is, we've had Jeff and Ian come in and give their thoughts on censorship. We've had Ashley and Brad kick off the entire thing with their thoughts. I brought in a friend who doesn't like horror movies and generally doesn't like censorship. So we are going to discuss, hey, what's it like from the outsider's perspective? What is it like if you actually don't like these movies? Is Mary Whitehouse right? So sit back, get some popcorn, and we'll be back in several seconds with that.
Has anyone ever told you that you're just a little preachy?
And welcome back. So we're kicking off our deep dive into the Section 3 prosecutor list by bringing in somebody who isn't Ashley, isn't Brad, Jeff, or Ian.
No, I'm not. I am Teresa. Hi.
A longtime good friend of mine, and somebody who absolutely does not like the horror movies.
No. At least not the modern horror movies.
So let's go with a baseline. What do you, is there any horror movies that you like?
Okay, technically horror, a lot of the old monster movies, the Godzillas, some of the B-movie stuff where you see, you can just about see the guy moving the props, and sometimes you do see the hand moving the props. Technically horror movies, Ant, things like that. Those I can go for. The occasional murder mystery, many of which are not actually horror, I can go for, like Rear Window.
Horror is a very fluid and hard to define subject. It's not like comedy where you can say, okay, I can see, even though that didn't make me laugh, I can see why it was supposed to make me laugh. Horror can be, you know, suspense. Can it be, you know, just straight up slasher?
So the stuff I avoid at all costs is the slasher stuff. I've got no interest. I've got no interest in things that make me go jump. I've got no interest in seeing internal organs, anything like that. And I have no interest in the 15-minute rape scene or the 15 minutes of people screaming.
However, you also not a fan of the censorship, right?
No, I am not a fan of censorship. I am a fan of a rating system in order to give parents a guide. I'm a fan of with certain movies saying, yeah, under 18, nope. The parent can get the video, bring them home if they want, but the movie theater shouldn't let them in without the parent's consent.
So, Mary Whitehouse, to a point, has a point then.
To a point, she has a point. There is a time and a place for a label on a movie, for a, if you're under 14, not without your parents say so, if you're under 16, 18, whatever the societal age limit is, whatever the blocks for maturity are within a society. English society has different age gaps than we do here in the States for our determinations.
Yeah, the 17 rating, pretty much when they say, you, and so pretty much when they have a rating, they say 12A, it means a 12-year-old with an adult, or just a 12 means, you know, 12-year-olds can go in. 17-year-old, a 17 rating means that they're 17-year-olds can get in. So actually, it's much easier to comprehend rating system then, okay, what does that R mean?
Yeah, that's the biggest problem with a rating system is who's doing the rating this year, which bureaucracies change slowly, which is in some ways a good thing because it means that no one administration can have an undue impact on it. But it also means that no one administration can fix something that's gone horribly sideways.
It's interesting how we wound up with the MPAA, which is pretty much a broken system.
Very.
It's all done in secret. It's all very behind closed doors. There's absolutely no transparency to whatsoever. But the BBFC, however, modern day BBFC rating systems is very open. They're very much a, here's what's wrong with the movie. And they'll go through bullet point by bullet point of, okay, it's got rape, it's got murder, it's got nudity. I mean, just step by step by step.
I think in the States, there is a lot of stuff that's behind closed doors only attitude, especially with our absolute weirdness about a tit or an ass.
Oh my God, we saw boobies! Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you can show people tongue diving in each other's faces as much as you want, but No nipple. Ah.
Or you can just have Schwarzenegger run around and blow away dudes for 45 minutes at the end of Commando. Mm-hmm. Which, okay, is a reasonably blood-free extravaganza, but it's still, you know, 45 dudes getting killed.
Another thing that would feed into the lack of transparency here is that various organizations desperately want to control it, and they don't want people to realize that it's being controlled. You have the religious right getting in there. You have people with various agendas getting in there, and they don't want you to realize that they are actively censoring things. Americans don't react well in many of the more urban northern areas or anywhere on the western coast, in the urban areas, to the idea that somebody else is controlling what they have a right to read. There are areas of the country where it's quite the opposite. They want a really, really tight control because, oh my God, you can't have something non-Christian! And it's absolutely silly. And they're trying to sneak in, and they want that process as hidden as possible.
The more eyes on the target, the less control they have. That makes actually a distressing amount of perfect sense.
In small towns, it's easier to get that groupthink going. I do have a coworker who was raised not too far from Dallas, and he's talking about these mega churches and the kind of groupthink that would get going in the suburbs of Dallas because they all went to the same 10,000 seat church that had four sermons every Sunday. Congregation of 40,000 people. They all went to the same church or a church very much like it. They all went to schools that were the same. They could get that groupthink going.
And then you wind up with folks like Rod Serling, who did the Monsters Are Due on Maple Street, where you have the insular community and this microcosm of essentially that playing out.
There are some of the... And I suppose that's officially part of horror or unofficially part of horror since it's so loosely defined. But it's much more 1984, the whole psychological aspect, than the graphic stuff that I won't have anything to do with.
Psychological horror, psychological messing with your brain is much easier to tolerate for you than...
Yeah, because I enjoy watching it play out. You can see the primrose path in the case of that episode you were talking about. You could see the whole them versus us going on, and then the start of the paranoia, which was such an excellent descriptor of society at that time.
And when horror is good horror, I mean, gets it right. When they talk about, societal issues, you get Godzilla, which is, yes, a horror movie, and I will defend that to the death as a horror movie, but it is, that fucking movie is really bleak.
Yes, it is.
But at the core, it has something to say. Mm-hmm. I just got done seeing, okay, when we're recording this, Us had just come out. Mm-hmm. Us is nothing but this psychological message and this very meaningful, I don't even know where I'm going with that sentence. That sentence just flew off the rails. Bye bye.
Wibbly wobbly, timey wimey.
Bye bye sentence. Yeah, we're not gonna, yeah. So when horror has something to say, I think it works best. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, and you're not privy to this, but a lot of the stuff, probably about 80% on the stuff on the list, not so much anything to say.
For a lot of them that I've taken note of while you guys have been doing this project, they have somewhat less plot value than your average low budget Hong Kong martial arts flick from 1978.
I have difficulty arguing against that. I can't argue against that. So let's go to another point that I can't argue for. It all comes down to good parenting then, and being aware of what your child is doing.
Yep.
So you get folks like, well, little Timmy goes around the corner to the less hands-on parent, we'll say. How would you say, well, you know, oh, I can't watch my child 24 hours a day. Well, you know, when he goes off to little Timmy, what do we do?
You have the control. You can talk to little Timmy's parents. You can find out what little Timmy's parents thinks are acceptable. What little Timmy's parents have accessible for the kid. You can go visit. You can control whether or not your child is going to little Timmy's or not. Roundabout's middle school, the kids start developing more independence. You're going to have less control on that.
Well, the parent's job is to say no, and the kid's job, and Lord knows I did this plenty of times, is to go sneak into the R-rated movies.
The thing is, that's where the relationship with the kid does come in. If you've got the relationship there, you're going to hear about it. You're going to hear either through the kid or through the kid's friends or teacher, because the kid was bragging about the movie they saw illicitly over at Timmy's house or Angie's house. You're going to have that bragging. You're going to hear about it one way or another if you open yourself up to listen. If you've got a kid who was like I was, where the first half of Night of the Living Dead, we had an awesome teacher at Meany who would show that once a year. The old black and white Night of the Living Dead gave me nightmares. I did not watch the second half. My parents were very well aware that I had chosen that activity. I didn't sleep downstairs in the basement where my room was for a week because I was all too aware that the zombies could kick in those windows.
Conversely, now we went to the same school many millions of years ago when the dinosaurs roamed the earth, and you were a couple of years ahead of me, but I had the same teacher, and my mom knew that what the plan was and that I was going to go see Night of the Living Dead because that was the only class in the entire year that I performed to A-plus levels, because A-plus gets you into the movie. Anything less, you get shown the door. So I busted my balls.
When he had that, because you could go to the dance. You could go to the library, and I decided not to do that this time around. Or you could go to his movie. I went to the library the second day.
And I ate it up like a madman, starving madman at a buffet. But then my mom, she always knew that I was going to go off and watch the horror movies and the R-rated movies. Hell, she took me to the drive-in plenty of times. I saw more crazy things with her. Yep. Good parenting.
Yeah. She was aware of where your limits were and didn't exceed those limits. My parents never took me to a horror film. I never had any interest in a horror film. So they weren't going to try to shove it down my throat. Good parenting.
Good parenting, yeah. All right, so then I got a question for you. Assuming that all parties have agreed and that everything's consensual and everything's legal and above board, can art, not necessarily movies, can art go too far?
It can go to the point where slap a rating on it, yes. Years and years ago, one of the larger local conventions, sci-fi conventions, somebody actually brought a dead cat in a glass case and called that art at one of the local cons. Funny enough, the next year, the art exhibit said, no animals. No previously alive things in our art exhibit. That was a case where somebody went too far.
Boy, now there's an interesting angle in that, okay, let's assume that the cat was obtained in either you're driving by and it was an accident that you happen to find and you pick them up.
Or it was your own cat that died of old age or of cancer or of whatever.
Right. You know, I think I would still say it's okay. I think it's disgusting. I wouldn't view it. I don't like it as art. But that's not my call to make.
That's where a rating system comes in.
And being that the convention was a private-owned organization, they can say all artists must wear tutus when presenting their work to the audience.
Yes,
they can lay down whatever law they want.
They can lay down their law. And I know they had laws or rules in place about graphic, how graphic something could be, the level of nudity, because they knew that they had toddlers wandering through. So they had set their bar. Their bar did not include a dead cat. The next year, their bar included no dead animals.
So, no, I support them on their, hey, it's our show. Whatever, you know, what we say goes. If you don't like it, go find your own damn convention.
Mm-hmm. And that goes for a lot of museum exhibits, a lot of art museum exhibits, where they will have a show that focuses on something. And if it's something that crosses my personal boundaries, I don't have a need to pay money to go see it. I don't have a need to support that kind of art. I can vote with my dollar.
But you recognize that it's a valuable resource to somebody, just not for you.
Nope. Sometimes I think it's not valuable to anyone. But people still want to go see it. Okay, that's their waste of money. I literally cannot see any value in it. If somebody else wants to waste their money on it and support the artist, go them. I don't get it. I support their right to do the exhibit. I support the right of the people to go to the exhibit. Once again, giving that all is consensual.
And above board. Yeah.
And above board. That there's, if it's an art exhibit of things taken from the janitor's toe cam as he stuck his foot underneath the lady's stalls, that's not consensual.
That's fine. And drop the hammer on him. I have no issue with that. That's no bueno. It's interesting that Mary more or less comes down on that, she had an infamous quote that said something to the effect of,
"And I'm afraid, people who say, but why shouldn't adults be able to see this kind of thing in their own home? I'm half tempted to say that people who make that kind of demand, knowing that children are likely to see it, aren't really themselves very mature and adult."
So that's just Mary projecting herself on the rest of society. If somebody doesn't agree with her, then they're obviously a child and they're obviously wrong. This is no different than some of the televangelists we experienced here in the United States. If you didn't agree with them in all things, then you were obviously ungodly and wrong. And if you didn't donate lots of money to their temples to themselves, never mind if it was supposedly a temple to God, but their temples to themselves, then you were obviously wrong, a sinner, a hedonistic child who was in need of their firm guidance to bring you back to the proper way of thinking. And Mary is nothing other than the secular version of that. You need, spare the rod, spoil the child. Kind of thing. And if you didn't agree with her, then obviously you needed a dose of the rod to bring you into line to agree with her, because she was right in all things in her brain. And she managed to come in at a time, because she'd been doing this for years.
Oh, before since she the got 60s, beard. Yeah.
I remember an interview with one of the early directors of Doctor Who mentioning that Mary Whitehouse had written in about a scene, and the director going, "Did I go too far on that one?" Yeah. Most of her letters you could ignore, but that one, yes, I went too far.
Should intent be factored into whether or not something is into a movie's rating? You take something like Possession, which was a movie about a breakup of a family, and it was the director working through his own personal demons. And it's not necessarily a gross or violent movie, although it has a couple of scenes to go, yeah. But it's a very intense movie. It's really hard to watch. And then you have something like, just your average porno. Which is, the only job this movie has is to show people fucking and to titillate. Should they be considered with the same weight?
the intent of the Dead Cat Arts installation might have been, you know, this is my beloved pet. I am preserving them forever. Or the intent might have been, let's see how many people I can squick out. You can't know that. You can't know the author's intent. You can know what the author stated his intent is. But stated intent, real intent, do they actually line up? Sometimes.
No, that's fair enough. And you wind up with instances like back to Night of the Living Dead, where George Romero absolutely swears up and down that he intended no social commentary with Ben getting killed at the very end. But you've got a black dude being gunned down by a white lynch mob in the height of the civil rights era. That's going to put baggage into your movie, whether or not you intended that baggage to be there or not.
Exactly. And that's the whole thing about intent. There should be a more objective rating. You can't judge the intent.
So, do you have anything else you want to add to the conversation?
I think we've pretty much covered it.
All right. Well, it sounds like that's an episode then. Well, thank you for joining us and hanging out for the half an hour. We'll be sure to bring you back in, you know, when we come up with another list. All right. We'll check you later. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us as we kicked off our deep dive into the Section 3 list. Join us again here next week when we actually take a look at a movie. Yay! We're watching... What the hell is it we're watching? Oh, yes. I am legitimately, honestly shocked that it's taken this long for Sid Haig to show up on the Video Nasty list. Because next week, we're getting Sid Haig in The Aftermath. Drop us an email in the meantime. Tell us how much we love Sid Haig, because face it, everybody loves Sid Haig. The email address is thevideonastyproject@gmail.com. And until next week, stay evil.
Well, I don't call this a new era in televisual entertainment.
No. I call it very, very dull.